You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
This is Diana Lear, and today we have Dick Nelson, an artist and educator who lives on Maui and who studied with Albers at Yale University. Hi, Dick.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how you got started being an artist, your journey that led you to Yale.
Well, let me start first by saying that I had a stroke about 6 months ago, hence the problem of talking.
You sound good.
Okay. Where I started art school, California College of Arts and Crafts, which is now known as California Arts.
What was your background before you went to art school that led you?
High school. And I learned cartooning by myself. And so when I got to art school, the school asked what I wanted in a major. And I said, cartooning. He said, well, we don't do cartooning.
Okay.
We teach you to draw.
And okay.
From that, you can go in any direction. So that's how I started. And by the end of the 4 years, I had no interest in cartooning. I had watercolor with George Post. And for 10 years, I painted like George Post. In fact, toward the end, you couldn't tell mine from George Post. And then it dawned on me that I was just cloning. And to really find my own way, I developed and slowly changed what had been George Post. I was able to crank out some decent watercolors that would sell out at any show until I got my own style. And a lot of people said, well, why don't you paint like you used to? And I went from recognizable subject matter to abstract.
Right.
A whole new audience came in and purchased my work. And I found that the critics really went for the new work.
Okay.
And so I found myself.
You found your way.
Yeah.
What led you to go to school after art school where you wound up at Yale?
Well, because I was teaching at Penahoe, private school, the largest prep school in the country. I had 7 years of sabbatical leave, and the man who was my mentor, who was responsible for my going to Yale, was Harvey Arneson. Harvey Arneson was director of the Walker Art Institute in Minneapolis.
Okay.
He was out in Hawaii on a sabbatical, and for some reason, we teamed up. Why he was attracted to me, he was old enough to be my father.
Like a mentor figure?
Oh, yeah. And he asked where I was going for my sabbatical, and I told him that I was going to the Rhode Island School of Design. He said, well, I understand that you're interested in color. Why don't you go to Yale? And I said, because my grade point average, or what in the world would I be doing at Yale? He said, you're going to Yale. He knew the director of the art department at Yale. And so I said, well, I can't go for 3 years, which is a requirement for a degree, in a master's degree. He said, well, go for your 1 year. And Yale took me on as a special student so I could pick and choose what I wanted. So I took as much from Albers as I possibly could. I was a graduate painter in his class. And the color class was something so very special. My life would be totally different. My influences would be totally different had I not had that experience with Albers.
And since then, you have taken that experience and you have spread that around by teaching so many artists.
Well, the thousands of kids that went to Penahoe were subjected to it. And since Pinhole, 30 years, 40 years of teaching all over the country.
Yeah.
And the impact, but influence of Elbers on myself as well as others. Harvey Arneson went on to become director of the Guggenheim. I feel badly that I didn't say or do something more for what he did to my life. But I feel that the influences that I have had on other people, thousands, through this experience has been my rewarding him. There must be 20,000, at least, over 50 years of teaching.
You and I have talked before about certain books that are representing Elbers' teachings where you have found errors.
Well, he published a book in 1961. I happen to have a color plate in the book, which is really quite an honor, because there were only about 30 or 40 students, and he had thousands.
Yeah.
I have found the book very difficult for persons not having had the course. Since there's no critique in the book, I felt compelled to do the critique in a system that would make it possible for someone who's never taken a course to go through and critique themselves. I presented this idea of the critique since half the course was critique. I don't know how anyone trying to learn this color course could get it from the book alone without a critique.
And what is the book called?
Elbers' Interaction of Color. I find that it was very sad that the Elbers Foundation director was all for my participation with Elbers. He wanted desperately to have me come back and talk to him about Elbers, and I found that as soon as I mentioned any correction to the book, the door closed, and I never again heard from him. And I feel it is important that the corrections that need to be made. Elbers is great, a mentor as he was, has gone, well, we've gone well past where he was. And I have, without a doubt, come to a conclusion that several things have to be changed in the book. And there's no way the foundation is going to go with this change.
If they didn't change the book, at least they could release a companion to the book that has those corrections.
Yeah. And but they come out with a program which can be bought online for the Elbers book. It has everything in it, animations and everything, except that, again, there's no critique, and I can't imagine anyone going through the rigors of this course on the trial and error, which he firmly believed in. It would be impossible. I don't know why they came out with the program that they did without the critique.
So there is a critique that you created.
Yes.
And if somebody did want to get a copy of it, what would they have to do?
Well, write to me.
To your email. So we'll have that posted. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about just the fundamentals?
Yeah, there was...
I know that's difficult without a visual.
Yeah.
But just in a very basic...
Well, for example, Elbers was so close to understanding the arrangement of an array, which is basically you have two colors, which are parents, and all of the offsprings of these parents.
So two parent colors, and then the offspring in between.
And you could have as many children as you like.
Okay, and you call that an array?
Array.
Did he call that an array?
No, he didn't arrive at this. With the array, I was capable of mixing two colors to form a third color. That third color would be the active color between the two. And had he realized this, the course could be no longer trial and error. I have a color plate in the book. In that, there is a, the assignment was to make four colors appear as three. Well, in order to do it, you had to have two parent colors and two siblings or two offsprings of the two parents. Now, it stands to reason in the array that if you have a parent and it has a child that favors that parent and the other favors the other parent, let's take green, red.
Okay.
All right. Now, because they're somewhat similar, complementary, their offsprings will favor the red being, let's say, rust.
Okay.
The other would be an olive green. In other words, they've been toned.
Yeah.
And as a result, if you take the red and put it, or red, rusty red, against red, it's going to look more green. Take the green of the olive green, put it on something that's really green, and by contrast, it's going to look more red. All right. So you can take four colors then and make the two siblings look exactly alike. But in mine, I used sort of a red-orange and a blue-green. And the siblings had white in them. That would never be. And he didn't recognize this. It still was very effective in the book, but I saw the flaw. The offsprings cannot have some other color than themselves.
Just two the parents. Two, a combination of the two parents.
Yeah.
No tints or it's got to be pure.
So this is when I realized that the book was flawed, that I shouldn't have been in the book. Throughout the book, there are all kinds of errors that based on the discovery of the array and going beyond that to a matrix, a full matrix. Now, if magenta married yellow, magenta and yellow has an array of colors that are all in array, work very well. And magenta to, say, blue is another array. Now, if it's arranged in a matrix, so it goes vertically from a horizontal, we have colors which are related to the first colors, but by adding the blue, it's a different array, still related to the yellow and the magenta.
Well, like you can create a square where each corner is a color, then the array is both vertical and horizontal.
Yeah.
All through
all
the square.
All those colors, really.
Yeah. And I've seen you do that in Illustrator. Yeah. You can create these matrices in Illustrator.
It's just amazing.
It's,
and when that happened, I said to myself, this takes the trial and error out of the equation.
Okay.
And I tried, in 20 minutes, I did every assignment, and the results were perfect. So that my students now have gone so far past Elbers and anything is were done in this class because we work with a matrix and the Elbers didn't.
It sounds really fascinating to have learned from him because he was really a maverick, right?
He was absolutely amazing. He didn't give answers, but he pointed out things that were so true. And it was this purity of thought that was so beautiful. And I suddenly realized that here was a real teacher. And the trouble with this is that he is so famous now. that he is flawless. And he's human, you know. He would applaud, I think, where we've gone with this now.
Yeah.
And using a computer instead. Because a computer, you can take the format and plug anything in very quickly.
Right.
And so instead of trial and error with paper cut up, oh, my God, you can do 10 times the work. The other thing is that we have an assignment called the Vanishing Boundary. It was simply an assignment where you take two colors of similar hue and equal value. This equal value was simply another assignment to cut out and inlay the one color into another, so from 10 feet away it would vanish and not be seen. It had to be inlaid so that the thickness of the paper didn't cast a shadow.
Right.
Okay. That was just an assignment. I found that this assignment was what Monet was doing with his color and was able to create luminosity from toned colors. By stepping back 10 feet from a Monet, 90% of the painting is toned. And yet it glows. It just is luminous. And so the Vanishing Boundary I applied to Elber's collations that were the earmark of his, hallmark of his.
What is a halation?
Halation is when you have a color which is the offspring between two parents. It will, against, let's say, a red, the green ochre or the green.
Like an olive.
Olive green will glow more green. Against a green background, it will glow more red. Okay.
The olive green against a red will glow quite green, but against the green parent, it'll glow red.
Yeah. So it's the same idea that if you have a basketball player, a normal-sized man next to him will seem very short. By contrast, the same man with a midget will seem very tall.
Right.
So you get the salation of contrast.
Yeah.
Well, I was able to use the Vanishing Boundary with the halation in his format of Homage to the Square, where he seats one square within the other to create halation.
Okay.
Okay. He also created several of the works without halation, and I don't know to this day why. I don't see what is happening in the work.
What the purpose was.
No, I don't.
Explain the Vanishing Boundary again. That's when you get two colors of equal value, which means they're the same depth
of light
darkness,
and dark.
But a different hue?
But they have to be close.
Okay.
Hue.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when you put them next to one another, what does that do?
Oh, well, you step back away from it, and it just is luminous.
Luminous.
Because what your eye does, it can't find the shape, and so it has an ability to have third color come in, a third color which is more luminous than the two that are making it up. I wondered why he never hit on this.
He didn't hit on Vanishing Boundary?
No. He had this as an assignment, but he never exploited it and told us Monet was using this. I found over 50 years of working, there are only two ways to create luminosity in color, and that is through halation and Vanishing Boundary. And that's why Vanishing Boundary is got to be separate color, not blended. You blend with your eye from 10 feet away.
The eye blends it for you.
Yeah. most people think of the brushes as being very bright and very bold in their color. And some were, but 95% of the work was toned. They mixed almost invariably, and they would put it down as separate color.
You know this like the back of your hand from all the years you've been working with it, from getting trained directly under Albers and then having taken it further into this matrix that you can actually do on the computer, and it just expands the possibilities.
Oh, tremendously.
And you have created some online classes or tutorials for students and artists that are listening that are interested in learning more about Albers' teachings that they can access on your website, correct?
Yeah, and through Vimeo.
Vimeo, okay. Yeah. So we can post that on the site. Yeah. Did you create a book with a critique?
No, I created a CD. There's a lot that has to be listened to over and over and over again because I go through it very rapidly. Some very important things could be missed if people don't have the patience to stay with it.
Yeah.
And if you figure, you know, his course for the half a year, semester of course, but you go into it and learn by doing. And so with the CD, you have to do the same. You have to really do the assignments and then try the critique and see how it works.
And the CD is available?
Well, no. If anyone wants it, I can publish a copy for them.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.